Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the Talkback Hour. Once a week of all the live broadcasts I do, I skip the guest, no original in-depth investigative reports, no hard-hitting insights into a particular social issue. Rather, it's about health, healing, and what's on your mind with some environmental issues. I'll also talk about the 10 most wasted countries. Wasted? As in, well, they're out to lunch, and we're one of them. And I'll tell you about this. This is from Ruth Fowler. You'll find it interesting. 2 billion people with dementia? How's that possible? Billion, not million. The medical establishment is shocked at the risk numbers on the horizon. I'll give you the latest on where most people in America are going. Into forgetfulness. Also, for those of you who have said, well, that rat study you were talking about, wasn't that discredited by a group in Europe? Yeah. Yeah, the European Food Safety Authority. But what happened? Well, then along comes the Court of Auditors, and they denounce that group as having conflicts of interest, and they're the ones overseeing the Court of Auditors are selected by the European Union on all such issues. So once again, we win, meaning genetically engineered foods are dangerous. We don't have long before the election in California. I'll be back in New York as soon as I do everything I can within my power to educate the people in California through discussions, lectures, and tomorrow it'll be a four-part documentary on genetic engineering and why they say it should vote yes on Proposition 37, meaning vote yes, we want our food that is genetically engineered labeled. If it's labeled, 90% of the American population said they won't buy it. Nice way to put Monsanto out of business. Also, don't ask, don't tell. When people ask me my views upon all these president and vice president discussions and debates, I find them sophomoric. I find them imbecilic. I find them just mind-numbingly stupid. Unless they address some of the questions that I'm going to raise on our program today, then it might be worth listening to. So as you see, we have a lot to share, but 10 minutes into the program, the lines go open and you can call in anywhere. You can hear my voice and you can call 888-874-4888. Let me see. What is that number? 888-874-4888. I believe that's it. Yes. 888-874-4888. And ask any question, make any statement, share any thought. Let's begin. If you have stress and you're not getting a good night's sleep and you toss and turn and you take your problems to bed with you, here's something that could help. I'll give you a few remedies. Passion flower, holy basil, valerian root, chamomile and lemon balm teas, kava, and St. John's wort. All of those have been proven with a lot of good science behind them that they help relax you, they help relieve stress and anxiety so you can have a better night's sleep. Now, for those of you who want to spice up your biochemistry, there's a good way of doing it. It's with capsaicin. Capsaicin is the active ingredient in red pepper. In effect, it's what gives the heat to the spicy foods. And it's found in a lot of foods in other countries, but not a lot in the United States, which is unfortunate because most people don't like it hot. In point of fact, as far as your biochemistry, the hotter the better. You won't appreciate it. It is the capacity of this when it gets up to around the highest heat indexes. By the way, the hottest peppers in the world only measure 1.5 to 1.6 Scovilles, and jalapenos and cayenne pepper come in at about 8,000 to 50,000 respectively. So you have some that are very hot. The hotter it is, the greater the benefit in your body. Why? First, capsicum or the hot pepper reduces pain. It can help unblock some of the ways that our body processes free radicals, allowing the body to be healthier and trapping free radicals. Now, mind you, there is no actual burn taking place. The excited neurons, for example, in your brain when you have capsicum, they release a neurotransmitter called substance P, and that transmits the feeling of pain to the brain. This principle of capsicum has shown its worth as a natural pain reliever by depleting the amount of substance P, therefore decreasing the number of pain signals sent to the brain. And that's why it works also as a cream when it's put on arthritic knees or sore muscles. It also helps you lose weight. So when you have that cayenne pepper, and generally it's in capsules that you get your best benefit, just pouring it on your brown rice or in a soup, you probably won't get enough. But taking a capsule, you will. And in one laboratory study, it showed that it increases brown fat metabolism. And that's good, because brown fat metabolism is associated with increased energy expenditure and decreased overall body fat. And then it kills cancer. That's correct. The hot peppers are great for killing cancer. Prostate cancer tumors shrank 80% when exposed to capsicum. There was an additional study that showed that lung cancer cells and pancreatic cancer cells were also destroyed with capsicum. It kills these cancer cells by triggering the mitochondria in the cells to undergo a programmed cell death or cell suicide. So my suggestion, make sure that you're spicing up your meals, getting your hot pepper, and putting it into a juice is also good. Now, something else that's good for you is our sprouts. Sprouts are one of nature's most nutrient-dense foods. In fact, you'll frequently have far more vitamin C, a lot more enzyme activity in the small microgreen in sprout than you will in the full vegetable. It's diluted. The larger it grows, the more diluted it becomes. The smaller it is, the more concentrated it becomes. I remember when I was in Sweden, and I went to interview the Ralph Nader Sweden, Annika Jarlicker. And it was time of the year when you have the short summer, and they have these little strawberries, and I was given a cup of these strawberries, and they were little tiny things, and they were about the size of a kernel of corn. That's how small they were, but just as sweet as they could be. They were also very high in nutrients. So nature knows how to pack the nutrients into these small elements, like a sprout. When we look at a good diet, we know that we have to have grains, legumes, pulses, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, chia seeds, flax. Why? Because they all contain protective nutrients. So when you soak them and you ferment them and you sprout them, you're removing toxins and you're unlocking all the potential power of the plant. That's why a nut milk like almond milk or pistachio milk or walnut milk is much more nutritious than a cow's milk or even a soy milk. Now, one of the things that we notice is that seeds and nuts and legumes and grains all contain enzyme inhibitors and phytic acid that depletes other nutrients when consumed. And that they reside in the outer fibers. And so what happens is when you soak them and then you sprout them, you release these and they're no longer present. Now, phytic acids are organic acids that are bound to phosphorus. And these are found in the outer layers of bran, for example. The phytates block the absorption of essential minerals like calcium and magnesium and copper and zinc and iron. And so if you have a diet high in just regular seeds and grains, legumes, you're going to get too much phytic acid. That's why the more fermented food you have, the better it is for your digestion, the less phytic acid you have. Remember, soaking overnight removes phytates, and that neutralizes those enzyme inhibitors, which washes off the phytic acid. It activates beneficial enzymes and microorganisms, and that is terrific for you. I would say the minimum to soak would be 7 hours. Then you'll get your benefit. So in the United States, we're not used to fermenting unless it's apple cider, which is good for you, or sauerkraut. Those are probably the two most popular fermented items that we do. But understand that fermentation and sprouting also breaks down gluten and makes protein easier to digest. So when you're eating sprouted legumes, sprouted seeds, and sprouted nuts, in effect you have pre-digested the food. Hence you have greater nutrient availability. And that's all good for you. So let's get into sprouting, and let's start sprouting more things and eating more sprouted food. And now the good news is in health food stores, you can find hundreds and hundreds of sprouted and fermented foods that can help you in your areas of digestion. Now, let's say that you're a regular person and you've got a headache, or you've got a cold coming on. There's a high probability you're going to take aspirin. Well, according to Sayer G. of Green Med Info, I read a nice little piece today, and it talked about the history. You go clear back, the 5th century B.C., the Greek physician Hippocrates wrote about the use of a bitter powder extract from willow bark. But, and here's what's important, Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine as we know it, he reduced, as far as the philosophy of modern medicine, they're not practicing it, he reduced the fevers. He also was able to diminish pains and aches. And here in the United States, Native Americans and early pioneers knew that the willow bark could reduce pain and fevers. So, what was this remarkable healing principle within the bark that relieved disease? It's known as salicylic acid, from the Latin salix, meaning willow tree. And it functions as a hormone. And quite simply, the more fruits and vegetables that you eat in a given 24-hour period, the more likely you are to have a physiological significant concentration of the salicylic acid in your blood. And this is why, for example, people like myself who are vegans or vegetarians, we have the highest amount of grain and legumes in the diet, far more than what a meat-based consumer would have. And hence, we're going to be more pain-free. Now, the chemical acetyl salicylic acid, commonly known as aspirin, is not natural. You may think it is. It's a synthetic form of the salicylic acid, which is formed when salicin, S-A-L-I-C-I-N, salicin, the bitter compound naturally found when plants like white willow bark is broken down within the human body. And salicylic acid can also be synthesized endogenously from benzoic acid and its urinary metabolite. Salicylic acid has been found to overlap levels in patients on low-dose aspirin regimes. So, while salicylic acid is found naturally in plants as salicylates, and acetyl salicylic acid does not exist in nature, is not formed as byproduct of natural salicylate consumption, and is produced only through industrial synthesis. For example, this is one method of synthesis. And that's where you can end up having all kinds of problems when you take aspirin. You can end up with hearing loss, tinnitus, cerebral bleeding, gastric ulcers, higher instance of dying from the flu. You can have Crohn's disease, Helicobacter pylori infection. All this is part of using aspirin. Those are the effects, not just the side effects. So the way you look at it is that we're using an awful lot of aspirin. And even the so-called baby aspirin, about an 80 milligram dose, is considered safe, which is relative to about a 300 milligram adult dose, which is known to cause widespread and significant gastrointestinal damage. And people die from it. About 25,000 people a year that we know of die. So what would be an aspirin alternative that you could get the same benefits but no harmful side effects? Well, willow bark is one, but pycnogenol is another. That's right, pick, P-Y-C, Nodge, N-O-G, and all, pycnogenol. There are studies from Thrombotic Research, the peer-reviewed journal, that found pycnogenol was superior, effective at a lower dose than to aspirin at inhibiting smoking-induced clotting without causing the increase in bleeding time associated with aspirin use. Let me explain this. Recently, I went in to get my annual physical exam. I have to because of my position as running my company and the insurance. They require every test known. I mean, you can't imagine how many vials of blood they take out, like 10 vials of blood. It's just amazing. They test me for everything you can test a person for. And always my blood, my C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen, LDL cholesterol, triglycerides, those are the bad ones. Those are the silent killers that if you have those elevated, those could kill you. Those are always great. And no viruses, no bacteria. Fine. And then I have to go through this whole cardiovascular test with an echocardiogram. Everything takes about an hour and a half. So when I'm sitting there going over the results with the cardiologist, he said, do you ever think about taking any aspirin? I said, why would I? Well, you know, that thins your blood. I said, yes, it does. And 25,000 Americans die each year of it, and it increases your risk of a heart attack. What? I said, yes. You should know that when you take aspirin, you destroy vitamin C, folic acid, B6, and trimethylglycine and B12. Without those, your homocysteine level increases. As your homocysteine level increases, you're more likely to have irregular heartbeat, tachycardia, afibrillation, all of which increases your risk of a heart attack. So, you can thin the blood, so half the equation, you will lessen the likelihood of a stroke, but you increase your risk of dying of an ulcer, and you increase your risk of a heart attack. Whereas if you took pycnogenol, that wouldn't happen. Vitamin C, it wouldn't happen. You'd thin the blood, you'd prevent a stroke, but you also help prevent a heart attack. And then he confessed that at one time he was a vegetarian, and he personally took the omega-3 fatty acids every day at 1,500 milligrams. And I said, but why wouldn't you tell all your patients? He said, oh, it's all about the politics of medicine. You don't want to get a reputation. I said, what kind of reputation? You know, a reputation for being, you know, too much into health. I said, so you're a doctor. You're a board-certified cardiologist. You're a professor. And you don't want to get people too educated about how to prevent a heart attack or a stroke? That, to me, is just it's extraordinary. But that's reality. I sat right across from them. We had this conversation about a month ago. So understand that I'm opposed to the regular use of aspirin because of all the damage it does, and it's not natural. And you do run a lot of risk. even with baby aspirin. Just read the article in Current Medical Research and Opinion. There's an article titled Gastroduodenal Toxicity of Low-Dose Acetylsalicylic Acid, a Comparison of Non-Steroidal Anti-Inflammatory Drugs, end quote. So then you find out that there's no safe level of an aspirin. But you could use pycnogenol, which will help your blood platelets, especially if you're a smoker or former smoker, and help your heart rate and help your blood pressure. I'm going to suggest that 200 milligrams twice a day of pycnogenol will do the job. Also, let's not us forget polycosanol. Poly, P-O-L-I, cos, C-O-S, and all, polycosanol. Polycosanol modulates your blood cholesterol level, brings it down. It's as effective as statins, but statins I would never recommend anyone use because they're just very toxic and they don't have a lot of good scientific profile behind them. It's made from a sugarcane wax extract and has been found to be as effective as aspirin at inhibiting blood clotting, but in a much lower, safer dose. So before going on an airplane where you're more likely to suffer because your legs are going against pressure and they're in that fixed position and the blood is pulling down into the veins, and that's where you have thicker blood, and if you've had milk or if you've had meat or butter or cheese, your blood's going to be even thicker, which is more likely to have a clot. More people have a heart attack after having a high-fat meal than at any other time. So by having polycosanol, if you're a flight attendant, an airline pilot, or a regular flyer, you could be saving yourself from having elevated cholesterol or a blood clot. And that's the key. I'm Gary Noll. One more. We now know that antibiotic resistance is growing because we use so many antibiotics. And we're consuming antibiotics in animal products. This is the latest in Oregon State University. I'll quote it. As a result of concerns about antibiotic resistance, doctors in the United States are increasingly prescribing newer, more costly, more powerful antibiotics to treat urinary tract infections, one of the most common illnesses in women. New research at Oregon State University suggests that the more powerful medications are used more frequently than necessary, and they recommend that doctors and patients discuss the issue involved with antibiotic therapy and only use the stronger dose if needed. Well, all right, let's just break this down. Cystitis and urinary tract infections are at an epidemic level, millions and millions of cases a year. Where does it come from? Urinary tract infections are some of the most commonly treated infections in outpatient settings, meaning you go into a doctor's office, they give you a prescription, and you go home. Cystitis is the most common type. Where do you find cystitis? Well, cystitis is usually caused by an E. coli bacteria that reside in your gut. But in your gut, it doesn't cause you problems normally. But what happens when it leaves your gut? Well, where does it go? It goes out of your body as feces. All right, so what's the problem? The problem is that the overuse of the most powerful drugs, especially antibiotics, speeds the development of bacterial resistance of these drugs. So then when you need a drug, it doesn't work. And these issues have gained global prominence with the dangerous, life-threatening MRSA bacteria. MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. So what if you don't use antibiotics? Can you still get cystitis? The answer is absolutely. Why? How about this for simplicity? When you defecate, do you wipe or do you wash after you wipe? Now that might seem like a foolish and almost an embarrassing concept. You never hear it discussed, but it should be. Because if you think you're clean after you've wiped yourself, just take a simple little tiny swab and put it under a microscope smear it on a glass and look under a microscope, and you'll see all those deadly bacteria that were okay in your body. Now they're trying to get out, but you didn't clean your rear end, and as a result, they're there. And when they're there, they don't stay there. You see, the anus sweats. And every time you drink water, the water, any beverage, goes through the body. And some of it gets down into the lower part of the rectum near the anus. And you have to have a certain amount, or otherwise the bulk material of dead cells, bacteria, and non-digested lignocellulose couldn't get out of the body. It just get too dry. So that moisture means that when you're sleeping, when you're playing sports, when you're sitting, the bacteria come out. And when they come out, they move. They move. They're alive. And they move. And where do they move? They move down. Gravity pulls them down. They don't go up your back and your head. They go down. And if you're wearing pantyhose, for example, or you're wearing tights, there's no place for them to go. So what happens is that you're then causing a friction. You're taking them and moving them towards the vagina or in a man on your testicles. And that's why men who understand proper hygiene and their parents taught them correct, always wash, always, every day, they wash their testicles and they wash themselves completely for their own health and the health and hygiene they would share with their partner. You think that maybe this is something so basic that we should have learned this a long time ago, but 99% of Americans don't wash after they defecate, they wipe. So we are about as ignorant as you can get in the world. There are places you go in the world, and if you ask them this question, they would just look at you as if you were condescending, and you're not. You're just simply saying, why do you have a bidet and we'd use it as a fountain in our house? What is this? So what happens, that bacteria goes down, and then now it's all over a man's testicles, or on a woman, it goes down through the vagina, and then it gets up to the urethra. And the urethra is where a woman vacates her urine, and it goes in, and it's very short, and goes in the bladder, and there it takes up residence. And that's called cystitis, or urinary tract infection. It can affect any part of the urinary tract. It's not common in men, very common in women, and once you get it, it's painful. You have to go, but nothing goes, and you're burning, and take some cranberry juice. Well, cranberry juice is good if it's unsweetened. There are other things you could take that are better. How about doing something simple? Join the hygiene race. Instead of living like some primordial Neanderthal, you shouldn't have a dirty ass. And yet most people do. That's unfortunate, because then they suffer. So then during intercourse, when a man's testicles hit against a woman's anus, whatever bacteria, E. coli she has, then gets smeared. That's the most common route of transmission. Do you ever hear this discussed anywhere that could help maybe 10 to 20 million women? Because it's not considered good conversation. Well, okay. It may not be, but it's what I have to do, because I'm not interested in seeing people suffer. I want to see people prevent disease, and I want to see people learn just some basic hygiene. I once had a buddy, and we were on a road trip. We were just going down to do the Penn Relays, the oldest race in America, running race in America. And it was 1994. Competition was phenomenal. Everybody who was anybody in track and field, and the 10K was there. Like Bill Don DeNoon. Great, great athlete, in my opinion. And so my buddy comes out, and he's brushing his teeth out of the bathroom, and then he gets something to eat. And I say, why'd you brush your teeth before you eat? He's, well, that's the way you're supposed to. That's what we do in Italy. I said, I know a lot of Italians. I don't know anyone who brushes their teeth. You brush your teeth after you eat. the whole purpose of brushing and flossing is to get rid of any buildup of bacteria that could affect the plaque and the dentine and the enamel. He just didn't get it. He would never change. Well, that makes about as much sense as wiping and then going to the bathroom. Just when you think that people can't get any more foolish in what they do, then someone always surprises you. So now you know how to prevent cystitis and urinary tract infections. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Now we're opening our line for calls. Be happy to listen to any of the stuff that is on your mind. Please give us a call.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, dig it.
Stop it.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
I'm Gary Noll. My engineer just said we just had a little bit of a problem. So if you were trying to get through and you weren't able to, that's been corrected. So you can try again now at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm on the road. I'll be on the road till after we have done the best we can do. All of the different people, Jeffrey Smith. He's a real hero in this whole effort and has helped lead this battle, the grassroots people all up and down California, and the rest of the country, the other 49 states, the activist citizens are watching. Because if we're able to win, if we're able to get the voters in California to say yes, we're opposed by $40 million in a campaign with scientists and all these people coming forward to take the checks of Monsanto and go out and say how good our food is and we don't need any labeling. So if we win here, we've had a major victory, and then I believe we could do this in every state in the country. And I'm doing what I can do with articles, debates, any way we can bring them out and show that their arguments are all wrong. So as soon as this battle's fought and won, I'll be returning. But every day, I'm in touch with my office in New York, and we're doing an awful lot of work on some important documentaries now, socially important, relevant issues. And I've decided to take some of the most interesting discussions that I filmed and put it up as the audio file, so you can listen to an hour and a half interview that I might have done with someone, but only 2 or 3 minutes to make it into a documentary. So the rest of it is really valuable. You can listen to, and that'll start next week. Now we're back up. Let's say hello to Bob from New York. Hi, Bob. Your turn.
Long-time listener, way back to the 80s and on BAI. I've been hearing a lot of different information about raw cruciferous vegetables having a negative effect on the thyroid. And I'm not sure what information is correct and what information isn't. Maybe you can shed some light on this?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The same people who were telling us that cruciferous vegetables were not good for you were also telling us that soy was not good for us. both adversely affected thyroid gland. So based upon the concern of many people in the audience, we did an exhaustive review. In fact, I hired a researcher full-time. It took over 12 months. They reviewed all independent studies on soy as well as on cruciferous. Over 6,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature were actually reviewed. Of those, we found that 99% of the independent quality studies published in peer-reviewed literature actually supported soy and cruciferous vegetables. So then how did all this come about? Who was saying all this? It turns out that people who are supportive and part of the Weston Price Foundation, which advocate a high animal protein diet, eggs, milk, meat, but from non-genetically engineered meat and eggs. And I invited two of them on my radio program to debate. And it was an hour debate. And I gave them the first shot of going out and tell me, show me the proof from the quality of, don't cherry pick one study. And see, that's exactly what they did. And then I came through and offered thousands of studies. And just, I spent a better part of my lecture time just saying, here are the studies that show your argument is not true. They would say that if you were on an exclusively soy diet, or if you had an enormous amount of cruciferous vegetables and nothing else, you could adversely affect your thyroid function, and that is correct. But that would be true of being on any form of an extreme mono diet. And any mono diet is nutritionally unsound and biochemically not healthy. So that was the argument. And it's in our files. You can go back and look at it, listen to the interview. Mm-hmm. And then they wanted a rematch, so I did a total of three debates with them, 3 one-hour debates. And they just kept coming forward. And finally I said to them, you know, have you ever received any money, directly or indirectly, from the meat industry, the dairy industry? And they hung up the phone. It's only one of two occasions my entire broadcasting career someone's hung up the phone. And Weston Price was this dentist who, earlier in the 19th century, discovered that when animals were fed a more raw diet, they lived a longer life and didn't suffer the same disease. And that is correct. You shouldn't be giving your pet high-processed foods. But it was that concept of taking that into humans when there were no studies showing that. All the leading studies show that a vegetarian diet with at least 11 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables a day, and the more cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower, daikon, the healthier you're going to be. And that is what the actual science shows. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's say hello to David from Northern California. Hi, David.
Hi, Gary. David, Gary, I have a couple questions. One is on, I eat a lot of mackerel, wild-caught mackerel, and it seems like 99% of it comes from China, but it does say it's wild-caught.
Would you believe anything the Chinese tell you?
Not much.
How many times have Chinese manufacturers lied, causing 47,000 animals to die because of the synthetic protein they put into their food? They are the world's largest theft of copyright, trademark, patented material. They are notorious. And their fish farms are the dirtiest imaginable. I would eat nothing from China.
If you can find halibut from mackerel from elsewhere, or have you, and if so, do you consider it to be a reasonably clean fish?
At this point, based upon the knowledge I have of how severe the fallout from Fukushima has become and how many times the government has lied, I would say that all fish between Japan and the west coast of the United States from the Bering Sea down to the tip of Argentina, I wouldn't touch it because radiation has to go somewhere. Excuse me, it's lightweight, goes in the atmosphere, it rains, goes in the ocean. Then it's picked up into the aquatic life. The aquatic life is eaten by small fish. The small fish are eaten by larger fish. The larger fish are eaten even larger. And then when you start looking at the toxic level of tuna, of mercury, it is off the chart. It is just unimaginable that anybody would be eating tuna based upon how toxic it is. But because it's not in the news and because no one talks about it, people think that it's not a problem. It is. So I would not be eating any of the fish, if I were you, in any of those sources. Okay? All the best to you. Let's say hello to Ross from Queens. Hi, Ross.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Ross.
Yes, okay, great. My question is pretty simple. Aside from the, I guess, what I assume to be the obvious hygienic benefit, is there a benefit to taking a bath over showering?
Well, the bath has several benefits. Especially if you use a mineral bath, it's extremely good, and Epsom salts bath are excellent. It relaxes the muscle. And when the musculature is relaxed, the energy flows, the heat from a warm bath and the water circulating increase your circulation, especially of your peripheral area and your lower area, such as your ankles and your feet. Do you ever notice in older people, their feet are always have these little blue veins and lines in them?
Yes.
That's poor circulation. So anytime you can get your legs and feet stimulated and circulation increased, that's a very good thing. And the bath can do that. As far as really cleansing, a shower can cleanse you just as well as a bath can. So either one's going to get you clean, but the bath will make you more relaxed.
Okay, great.
All the best to you, Ross. Thanks for your
time. Same to you.
And let's say hello to who else we have here that I can get on the phone right now real quick. Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, Luann. I've said it before. Nowhere else on the radio will you ever hear anyone cover vaginas, testicles, and anuses like you do. Where else but on PRN, Gary, I tell you.
Well, I'm going to tell you about a hotel bill.
Uh-oh.
A lady decided to give herself a big treat for her 85th birthday by staying overnight in an expensive hotel. So she checked out in the morning, and the desk clerk handed her the bill, and it was for $450. And she exploded, and she demanded to know why the charge was so high. The guy said, look, it's a nice hotel, but the rooms, you know, certainly aren't worth $450 for just one night. Not one night stay. I didn't even have breakfast. So the clerk told her that $450 is the standard rate, so she insisted on speaking with the manager, and the manager appeared, and forewarned by the desk clerk, informed the woman, this is an Olympic-sized pool hotel, meaning we have one, and we have a huge conference center, which are available for use. But I didn't use them, the woman said. Well, they're here, and you could have, explained the manager. He went on to explain that she could also have seen one of the in-hotel shows for which the hotel's famous. He said, we had the best entertainers from all over the world performing here, the manager said. But I didn't go to any of those shows, she said. Well, we have them. You could have, the manager replied. But no matter what, whatever the manager mentioned, she replied, but I didn't use it. The manager countered with the same standard response. And after several minutes' discussion with the manager on move, she decided to pay. She wrote a check and gave it to him. And the manager was surprised when he looked at the check. But, madam, this check is only for $50. That's correct. I charge you $400 for sleeping with me, she replied. But I didn't, he explained, very surprised. Well, too bad. I was here, and you could have.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Luann?
I have an email here from someone named Ken, who wanted to come to one of your lectures, but it was sold out. And as you know, creative minds always find a way. And through a friend, he ended up coming in through the back. He said the place was packed, and he never laughed so much at a lecture. And yet, he said, one of the greatest things was the points that you made while using humor. You asked people at the beginning of the lecture to take away, try and take away two new insights. And he says, I got at least 12 of them, and he's still using them. One is that we've been working on a relationship with this woman for 4 years, and no matter what we do, we still come back to arguing with each other about what we don't like about each other. Then we make up, and the cycle repeats. And you said, if you can't be in harmony, then what is the point? If it's not working, it's not going to work. Move on, close a chapter without blame. And last night, we had a long discussion about this, and we both agreed. What we don't like about each other is more important than what we do. You also said to think well about changing a part of your authentic self to accommodate another person's needs. And he said that was the clarion moment for us. So many times we try to change for each other, the real us versus the artificial part of the relationship. Now we are letting it go. What I keep living with is to stop living too small a life. And that ties into the next question that you asked us, whose life are you living? And I realized that I never wanted to be an attorney. I'm good at it, but I don't like it. So I'm going to make a transition. You said another important thing, that life is nothing but a series of essential transitions. Took me a while, but now I get it. He said, we get comfortable and stay in zones that protect us and stop growing. Then we get bored with the predictability of the sameness, and we sublimate our frustration with distractions instead of transforming ourselves. In any case, I want you to know that the lecture backstage was a life changer for me. And this is from Ken. He doesn't say where he's from or what lecture.
Well, thank you, Ken. To that, I would add this. Are you familiar with Paul Tillich?
Yes.
Great writer. He said the passion for truth is silenced by answers which have the weight of undisputed authority. And almost everywhere in our lives, when we're in a zone, as he would call it, or when we're in a stage, as I would call it, we forget the transitions should be what we should look for. But we're almost always talked out of them, because people profit by keeping us in a predictable place.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when you can be predicted to vote for a given candidate because you consider yourself a Democrat or Republican, or you can be predicted to use a credit card to buy stuff that you don't need, to pay with it for money you don't have, and then somehow sublimate the angst you feel when you get your bill at the end of the month. And instead of saying, why don't I just tear up this card, why don't I begin to make a list of the things I could barter or do with fair exchange? There's a neighbor down the hall who's a single parent and is spending half of her income each day on a child service place where she can drop her kid off. Well, I could do that, and then I could exchange something with that person. They're not looking at that. Instead, they're staying where they think they should be. And it's always an authority figure that tells them where they should be. It's the authority figures that win the day. Now, I see what happens when people want to make a transition in life and fear doing it. Because it's not so much that what they're going to change from to is the problem. Because that's not difficult. It's what you surrender when you finally give up the place of comfort where you're at. And our fear of being uncomfortable keeps us a prisoner. And that means that we look for the authority figures to tell us, I'm not going to change. I want you to tell me how many aspirin I must take to dull the pain from the tack that I'm sitting on. And the authority figure will tell them, 2, 10, 20. But no one in their belief system is going to tell them just to get off the tack, because they all benefit from it. If everybody started to think for themselves, If everybody began to cooperate at a grassroots level, if people began to make authentic changes in support of one another, every major institution in our society would collapse. So you never hear authorities unless they're undisputed. So you'll never have a progressive seen like Jill Stein or Dennis Kucinich invited in to a formal debate on an issue unless they are on that ticket, but otherwise they're never invited in. You'll never see Chris Hedges invited in to talk about why we celebrate war, because the people who are there to make sure that we all believe that war is to be celebrated and therefore don't.
He'd blow their minds.
But do you see the because Chris Hedges would not be considered an authority, they consider themselves undisputed authorities. And we make people undisputed authorities by letting them have power of an airwave, power of a radio, a television, an author. Suddenly they become an undisputed authority. And they're not. And the more you try to make yourself out to be something you're not, the more you commit yourself to living by lies. It was I.F. Stone who said, every emancipation has in it the seeds of a new slavery, and every truth easily becomes a lie. That's why I say, don't join the causes. Make the cause something that you are. So I won't join a cause if the people running that cause are doing it for their own self-interest, but I'll take what that cause means and I'll do something with myself, and I think that's what's important. We have time for one more quick one before we're out of time.
Oh, I don't have another one here.
Okay, good. All right, then I thank you, Luann, for coming on, and people want to get their comments over to Luann. How do they do that, Luann?
They can email me at whnn@aol.com. That's whnn@aol.com. Or you can call me at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Okay. I'm going to just finalize the program today by saying that the European Court of Auditors has criticized the European Food Safety Authority for its inadequate management of conflicts of interest, which it says is substantial. And why is this important? Because the European Parliament and the European Union had to have one court that oversaw conflicts, and the Court of Auditors is it. So when these scientists are coming up with these grotesque cancers in rats eating genetically engineered food, and then they get hammered, and the people hammering them are the European Food Safety, then it was shown that the European Food Safety Authority is filled with all these people with conflicts of interest, going right back to the genetic engineering companies. So we have won the day. We can show that the science coming out of France showing the cancer in the rats that ate the genetically engineered food, they are on the right side of truth and history, and the European Food Safety Authority, they're just a bunch of hacks who are in the pocket of the, and their own European Court of Auditors has so stated. So, that's the end of our program today. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program.